Sustainable development is not an option, it is an imperative. Earth Odyssey is an international organization that aims to research, collect, and present solutions to inspire and empower the ones responsible for educating the children who will lead the world in the future. This is a podcast extracted from the webinar with panelists from around the world.
Webinar 6, Inspiring Women Participation Together with Men and Youth Leaders for Tomorrow's World of Sustainability, Prosperity, Harmony, and Peace.
Good evening from Bali. Welcome to this fourth Earth Odyssey webinar. The title is Inspiring Women Participation as Equals in Our World to Make the World a Better Place. Before I go into a few details, I want to mention and give my heartfelt congratulations to Keke Shan for being in the Forbes magazine. Congratulations from all of us, Keke Shan.
Thank you very much.
The Project Earth Odyssey is a three-year project to 2022 to put the world on a pathway of sustainable development actions, because this is fundamentally what's been missing in everything we do. And why 22? Because that's the 30th anniversary of Rio. So let me begin by saying I'm puzzled. I'm puzzled and I'm concerned. All the men in this world have a mother. Most men have a sister or a daughter or a spouse. We men love our women in the home. We care for them. We appreciate them. And some of us even worship them, especially our mothers. Why is it then that the men in the workplace discriminate, do not support, do not empower women's promotion? Why is it that men change from what they do in the home to when they go to in the workplace? And this is across the world. So the question is, we need to understand what happens to men, be it in government or in business. What is important is that we have two challenges in this world. The challenges are human divisiveness. We have seen the Black Lives Matter marches and all kinds of marches. And the other problem is the destruction of nature. If you want to heal people, and if you want to heal nature, some characteristics are extremely important, because you cannot heal without compassion, without caring, without empathy, without patience, without sensitiveness, and without altruism, and much more. These are the characteristics we need. And we need to realize that 50% of the world's population, women and girls, are naturally endowed by our maker with these characteristics. We need to recognize these characteristics, which are essential if you want to make progress in the human world and in the world of nature. This disenfranchisement of women excludes 50% of the world's population from being active members to make a world a better place. So this is the challenges we face. Women worldwide still have to break free from societal, environmental, economic, and even religious conditions that keep them discriminated, suppressed, and unable to participate as equals. For decades, we preached the mantra, we must empower women. Who is we? Who is we? Is it 90% of the leaders of government who are men? Is it 80% of all CEOs in business that are men? So this mantra of we must empower women, women do not need any empowerment because women need to be inspired to mobilize everything that they have within themselves. And that is critical for us to begin to live in harmony amongst people and in harmony with nature. Are the political and business constraints against women? Again, it is men, and we have to ask the question why this happens. And you look at the current situation, it was four or five women leaders of this world in four or five countries that managed COVID-19 pandemic a little bit better than men did. So the challenge for us, especially men, is we must dismantle the patriarchal and discriminatory gender norms and the inequalities women sustain. All of us men have a mother or a spouse or a daughter, and we know how well we treat them. So here we are in this webinar, and in this occasion, in every previous webinar, we try to balance men and women in the webinar. Today, we did not wish to do that because we want to hear from you women, that how can we change, how there are two challenges. How can we change the world of men? And more important is the challenge that how women themselves can self-empower, self-inspire them to take their place, because without women, we will make no progress. So I want to end by saying that the process will be everybody has 7 minutes, and you will hear when your time is 15 seconds from the end. And I think we can start, unless anybody has any pressing point. Lorraine earlier said that we must turn off all our other digital devices. Only keep this webinar digital open. So I want to call on Alexia. You have the floor.
Thank you, Maringa. So I'll share the screen with you at first, and I just...
Please introduce yourself with a few words.
Yes, so good afternoon, good morning, good evening for everyone. And my name is Alexia Martin. And I'm grateful to have this opportunity to present you the initiatives out of the books. It's a project that in 2018, with my best friend Sophie, we decided to create the first festival on education here in Belgium. The main reason is that we wanted to create some networking opportunities between teachers, parents as well, experts, and even children, in order to stimulate their creativity, their know-how, by discovering and exchanging inspiring tools and approaches to foster children's education to become actors of change for the near future. As indeed, changing tomorrow's education is everyone's responsibility. If I may ask, as not to forget, today's theme actually is empowering women as a whole. As a matter of fact, actually, one can find that a majority of women teachers, a majority of women, sorry, are being teachers, at least in Belgium, as we can see here on this on these little figures. In the kindergarten as well as primary school, more than 83% teachers are women. And then in the secondary school also, there is a majority of women. And then it changes for the higher degree and university. If I may now ask Yuri to play the video of the after movie of the festival, so I can actually make you understand better what we do on a yearly basis. So as you could see, there were many women actually taking part to this event. And the festival really aims to be the meeting place for change makers. And sorry, I'll just. It really responds to a real need to rethink education and suggests concrete initiatives. We have specific objectives throughout the Out of the Books organization as a whole, because it used to be a festival by itself, but now it's really an organization we are working on. And we focus on valuing and empowering teachers and foster links between education stakeholders to encourage collaboration and sharing best practice. We try to really inspire, so as I mentioned, teachers, and so particularly women, in discovering methodological tools. We strengthened their training as well. We put the spotlight as well on nonprofit organizations which are tackling the question of specific needs, inclusion, like a school failure, as well as inequality. And we tend also to have stakeholders being able to make us discover alternative techniques centered on the well-being of our children and school life matters such as nature, citizenship, circular economy, stress management, nutrition, critical thinking, and philosophy. And we keep on continuing to develop collaborative projects with international as well as national organizations such as Ashoka Teach, which is well known in the UK. And here in this case, it's Teach for Belgium, as well as UNESCO and Be Education. Out of the Books community has grown up since its beginning, so it's since 2018. During the first edition of a festival, we gathered more than 1,600 people, mainly teachers, up to 50%, 30% of parents, and a bit less than 10% of children. But we are working on those two communities in order to make them also come to get inspired by all these initiatives. And in meanwhile, actually, and due also to Corona issues, we have enlarged our community on Facebook mainly, with more than 3,000 followers and potential actors of change. And so we have already offered more than 50 conferences, workshops as well, online workshops now. And we are really working on a program now called Teachers Got Talent. And our focus is really to put those initiatives from teachers worldwide, actually, on the spotlight. We really want to put them forward, to empower them, and also to let them empower others and in order to change the education's world and the mindset as well, and get to know and get really to inspire youth by those exchange of good ideas and best practices. We would like to duplicate the festival as a whole worldwide. I created it with my best friends. It was not a big issue. Money was not. I mean, stopped us at doing it. Certainly, we still need to find some subsidies. But what we would like to do is really to expand this initiative, as well as the digital platform of the Teachers Got Talent program. Well, and so the third edition will be taking place next year now on the 15th and 16th of October. Meanwhile, I invite you to follow our Facebook page, Festival Out of the Books, as well as our website, festivalootb.com. And yes, I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Alexia.
Thank you.
I think the most important thing is educating the teachers to be the educators out of the book and into the school of life. And I think that is really the crux of the matter if you want to make the youth of tomorrow the action-oriented leaders. So thank you.
Thank you.
Amina, if you are ready, and you will be followed by Kashini.
Okay.
Amina, you have the floor.
All right. Thank you. And hello, everyone. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm Amina Ekpo. I was Miss Nigeria in the year 2001. And that made me the 44th Miss Nigeria. I also have, I started an NGO called Touching Tender Hearts here in Nigeria. I'm in Nigeria, by the way. So we have been engaged in a lot of sustainable living projects. And yes, it's taken us around the country. It started off as a pet project. And I wasn't aware about climate change, sustainability issues and things like that, but I got the opportunity, the privilege of being educated by a very renowned environmental activist. His name is Mr. Desmond Mabhutu. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's very popular here. And so that's one of the ways, you know, you get to engage men. He's a man. And, you know, people who are, of course, enlightened in this area, educating women, you know, who might not be, it's a very good way. So you don't get to know these things if you're not told. So since then, we grafted that into the aims and objectives of the NGO and have done very well with trying to enlighten people on climate issues. And I've gone on my own to just become very passionate because I drew from the passion of Mr. Desmond Majeko Dumi. So, and he was very, very passionate. So anyway, we've done so many projects. For example, we have grafted that into our youth empowerment program where we train youths on skills development and just to help them be more ready for jobs, especially in this part of the world where skill seems to be a problem. You go to the university, or majority of our youths, our citizens, go to the university, but they come out without really being ready to get gainful employment. So we did that, and we incorporated the climate change awareness or education into that. So it was very difficult for our people to understand why we should talk about climate change. It's like, why are you talking about caring for plants and animals and you know, taking care of perhaps pollution and all? It was just difficult to understand. So it was good that we did that, and a lot of youths, you know, now can understand these issues better. They've gone ahead in their various endeavors to do a lot. At least some people have communicated back to say, you know, the trainings were very helpful. We've gotten feedbacks like that, and that's really great. And beyond this, we also took it to Akwa Ibom State, somewhere in the south, and I talked about engaging children as well. So we did a summer program to talk about sustainability. I hope I'm still on. Can you hear me, please?
Yes, you are.
Okay, all right. Okay, so we taught children about climate change. You know, we taught them about sustainability issues, about caring for the environment, you know, and embracing, teaching children how to cultivate plants and, of course, care for animals as well. And we talked about pollution and all of that. So it was really fun. It was really engaging. The parents loved it. And in all of this, we realized that there is a gap. There's a gap, you know, parents are not really there. In fact, the entire Nigerian society, I must say, especially from observing other countries, you know, are not really there when it comes to understanding sustainability issues, where the world is going, and how that affects us, affects the things we need to do. So that's just about it. Yes, before I go on to, you know, get to doing the presentation for my slide, we also did a nature festival. We're the first to actually do something like that. And then I saw that we stopped it because I saw that it didn't really get us to create the awareness that we wanted. It was not just about show business or really, you know, making doing something exciting and beautiful, but it was really about getting across these very important messages. So we had to put that on hold to try and, you know, think about it and see how we can be more effective.
You are cutting off.
Okay, sorry, my internet is a bit down. But anyway, so from this, we have come to see that there are other things that we can do to engage women. Now we are in the digital age. So my first point would be embracing the digital age. So women can connect with other women and target groups online, old school mates, colleagues, neighborhood groups, common interest groups, you know, and share good stuff to create awareness on tomorrow's world of sustainability, prosperity, harmony, and peace. So to get to, you use social media as well to get to know your connections and let them get to know you, which is basically the new normal. So we have to get good at this and safely navigate the digital space. So we need to build good associations, friendships, and partnerships. So we need to use social media productively and embrace it as a necessary and useful, and use it as and use it for good, basically. So because a lot of people feel like, oh, they don't need social media. I wanted to go off social media at some point because of thinking about safety issues and all of that. So also we need to be practical, which is my second point. We need to speak up for the issues that matter in enhancing tomorrow's world of sustainability, prosperity, and harmony and peace. For example, injustice, climate change, corruption, inequity, racism, hatred, and violence. And right now, the NGO is working on Nigeria, yes, we're working on generating said prohibition bill petition, because there's a bill like that which wants to prohibit generators, but we are saying the government needs to pay attention to certain things that must be put in place. You can see that, you can view that petition at the website, touchingtenderhearts.org. More information, we're using this as a tool to actually hammer in on those very serious core issues, you know, bordering around sustainability. So, and the sustainable future, to get those things to be. Okay, so there's no real value when ideas are in paper but not put into practice. So people need to be well informed as well. So we need to do research. We may need to do research, and then people need to get information across out there to others, real useful information. And you're going to be heard if you are actually living with integrity. So this is important. We have to be accountable to implementing the knowledge we have acquired in very, very practical ways and make the necessary adjustments and all of that. So we should never ignore our responsibilities. Nothing is too little and nothing is too big. So we need to teach the kids, we need to teach our loved ones all of this, and and share these things with our organizations as well, even bring it into our work as well. So I have resources, if I can say that, I have three resources just to round up, where I have done a research on similarities between the seven popular religions to help peace. Thank you. You can request it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Adina. You made three points. university output is professional skills only, with little understanding of the challenges in this world. Exactly. Nigerians have copied Silicon Valley, and you have created one of the finest Silicon Valley outside of Lagos. You should think of sustainability valleys in Nigeria and around the world, which brings the practitioners of sustainability together, just the way Silicon Valley did. And thirdly, I love your suggestion that why women don't use the digital networks to connect and discuss this whole issue of how women can break down the barriers that keep them outside of the promotions in profession. So thank you so much. Keshini, you have the floor, and Keshini, you will be followed by Lorraine.
Great, thank you. Good evening, everybody. It's evening in Mumbai, which is where I am based now. My dad earlier said, I'm a lawyer by background, but I have spent sort of more than 15 years now, mainly working in strategy consulting, and over the last 5 years, it's been more in the development space. The areas that I tend to focus on, and I see gender as something that is a horizontal, it cuts across many areas, but I work in areas such as financial inclusion, sustainable livelihoods, education, and health. It's been really interesting to listen to the two previous speakers before me, because they were actually live examples of what I would call programmatic interventions that are looking to kind of equate the balance here. I'm going to take a slightly different stance. I have worked with NGOs on a project basis, but I don't. I'm not part of an NGO, so I'm coming at it from a macro level. What I do want to say is that I think, you know, let's also take a step back and give credit where credit's due. There have been, at a global level, great strides have actually been made in advancing gender equity, right, in many areas. And basic education is one where you almost have an equal number of boys and girls in basic primary education. And participation rates, if you take a wider definition of employment, is also near gender equal. However, I think what is important to know is the challenges that we're now facing are more of a subtle nature, right? And these challenges continue to create huge barriers for women, particularly in the areas of higher education and employment. And you know, as I go through my points, you'll hear higher education and employment, and the context for this is it's quite simple, right? It's unless you can empower women either with educative tools or opportunities, it is very hard to have women in leadership positions. Now, that's not to say those are the only pathways to leadership, but in my experience, those are very basic fundamental points where when you give women access, or young girls access, I should say, to these kinds of environments, you're automatically seeding the sort of or germinating the seeds that you need for leadership and in empowerment. And going back to the barriers, I think based on the work that I have done and again experiences, I think there are largely speaking three types of barriers for women and young girls. So individual barriers, which includes socioeconomic status, where you live, your values, your attitudes, the culture that you are born into. Proximate barriers that are barriers that directly prevent access to women. Now, these could be in the form, again, of sociocultural, your community. It could even be laws, regulations in certain countries. An example of that is, for example, in many countries in the developing world in particular, access to sex education and family planning is not allowed in schools, right? India very recently repealed that, but until recently, sex education was not allowed for children in primary schools. And then the third type of barrier is actually, they're the structural barriers, right? So these are, and the structural barriers drive the proximate barriers. So these are things like sociocultural norms, perceptions, institutional barriers, policy frameworks, infrastructure, and actually often the structure of the labor market in any given country itself. So building on that, I think there are three things, right? Three things that really have struck me. So even when women are employed, it tends to be in the informal sectors. So informal sectors are the unregulated sectors that we have. And as a result, they're often paid considerably less than men. They tend to work in much higher risk roles, okay? Fewer women in more senior level positions. Women also, as we know socioculturally, tend to have less time to engage, right, with external employment opportunities, or at least income generating opportunities. And as we all know, you know, there is this entire thing about women being the primary caregiver at home. So all of that leads to women requiring more flexibility, more flexible employment terms, and often that leads to informal employment. It is important to know, however, when women are employed in formal sectors, you know, often in very good positions, there does tend to be both conscious and unconscious bias in the workplace. And, you know, I can talk for hours about unconscious bias, but I'm not going to go there for now. It is something that a lot of women are subject to, that often they don't even realize it. You know, I have personally witnessed organizations which say that they are gender neutral, but, you know, inevitably unconscious bias exists. And that does mean that very subtly women are often looked for leadership, for promotion. And in many sector and organizations, there continues to be a gender pay gap. I think the third point here is, you know, it's the social cultural element, right? So what happens in the home? What happens in your communities? What happens in the peer group? How are women perceived? How are young girls perceived? Which sectors or which types of employment are considered suitable for women or for young girls to even enter? There's a massive global drive for more women in STEM and TVET courses, which is great. But often if you look at how those courses are structured, you know, they tend to be courses that are at 7 o'clock in the evening, often in urban centers, and therefore they exclude women in rural areas, or just frankly, 7 o'clock in the evening is quite inconvenient for most people, let alone women that have primary responsibility. So for me, you know, I think there are so many things you can do to address this, but I've tried to break it down into very tangible solutions, which I think, you know, at a very base level, that's where we need to start. So one is incorporating a gender lens from the outset into any programmatic design, right? So we need to get that all the way through our programs. We need to look at gender disaggregated data and get it, share it, collaborate. We need to support women, young women in sectors where they are already employed. So whether that's through better maternity leave, or paternity leave for that matter, you know, just to having basic facilities. There is an urgent need for male participation in this conversation. So whilst I love the fact that we're all women, it is important to include the voice of men, and it's important to get them on side and understand this and on the journey with us. And then the other one, which is a big favorite of mine, is just very simply enhanced access to credit. So systemic efforts, collaboration, shared knowledge. That's at least where we start at the basic level.
Thank you. Thank you, Keshini. It's always good. And you started with a very positive note talking about the great strides that women have made. And then all the things that followed tells us that the way ahead, the road ahead is very long with many broken bridges and blocks. So it's a very long way that we can bring women as equals to the tables of making our world a better place. Lorraine, you have the floor.
Oh, great. I think it's perfect that I'm going right after Keshini. She just kind of gave the baton to me. And so what I really wanted to talk about today just is about that unconscious bias that she was mentioning. And so my name is Lorraine Mignon, and I'm from France, and I'm a co-founder of Kiko Lab, which is a collective intelligence collaboratory. And we actually have program called called Learning Gardens that we have developed to kind of scale up our accessible version of Learning Pods. That's not actually what I'm here to talk to you about today. So the Kika Lab is a change tank. And we use mutual commitment to help deep visionaries succeed in their missions. But today I'm going to talk about common sense at scale, which is a subset of collective intelligence. So to me, this is the most important topic in the world today. So you might think from the amount of talk we hear about intelligence that this is just a done deal, that we know how to do it. But in fact, we're just discovering the basics of collective intelligence, including how to even measure it. So collective intelligence is a group intelligence that comes from the efforts of multiple people. So the truth is, we don't even know how to systematically conduct a successful dinner for a family of 10, let alone achieve peace at scale. Now, we absolutely do have intelligence that works at scale. So what we know how to do is show the right product to the right person so we can capture their attention or get them to buy something. But what we don't have is an algorithm, which is a really fancy word for a specific methodology to achieve common sense at scale. So what would that even look like? To me, it would look like a collective conversation about how our entire economic system is based on a fiction of unlimited resources. This conversation might be happening on the edges, but certainly not in the center. So I'd like to examine why that is. And I think it starts with our collective assumptions, which are implicit. That means that they're not actually spoken about how intelligence works. And this starts with our assumptions of the smart individual. So I'm going to share my screen. Sure. Okay, can you see my screen?
It's coming up.
Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so let's start with the brilliant guy. Who do we think of as really smart? We have kind of this stereotype as Ivy League, white, confident, and expert. He's respected. Now, we not only assume that these Ivy League guys are kind of a 10 out of 10 in intelligence, but we're also assuming that intelligence of a group is the sum of its parts. So here we go, we have, say each guy has a 10 out of 10, there are five guys, we would give this in our minds, again, unspoken, a 50. So here on the right is a group of much more diverse, sort of, just kind of average people. And we might assume that they were a 7 out of 10 in terms of intelligence. And we add that up and we think that this group on the right is much less intelligent than this group of experts from the best schools on the left. So when the world systems are growing more complex, this makes us assume that the solution is to gather together the smartest experts to solve our problems. But here's the thing. These experts, they definitely know a lot of stuff, but it's actually just a small part of the whole. So these experts might be experts in the way the economy functions in theory. But here's the thing, this diverse group of people, they each have a different perspective that when in complicated systems gives us a different view of the whole. So when you place their observations together, you can start to, what we call in collective intelligence, you can start to sense make what the system is like as a whole. Because the thing is, not any one person now can possibly understand these complex systems. So that's why when you have these experts together at a table, not one of them says, we need to talk about the elephant in the room. And when I say the elephant in the room, I'm talking about how our economy is based on, infinite growth on a very finite planet. None of them knows that there is an elephant. So I'm now going to tell the tale of the PKE and the Brilliant Guy. So the PKE is a collective intelligence group that I started. And we were a group of people having great conversations. We were pretty equally matched in terms of our knowledge and intelligence. And then came along the Brilliant Guy. Now, the Brilliant Guy was amazing. Oh my God, he was so smart. He was so inspiring. He was so charismatic. But something funny started happening to our group the longer he was there. Our collective voices got smaller and smaller, and his started to get bigger and bigger. So let me stop sharing my screen. Does that mean we're almost done?
No, you still have a minute.
Okay. So not intuitively, the addition of the Brilliant Guy actually made our group dumber. So what is the lesson of the PKE? If we want common sense at scale, we actually need to anticipate the impact of the Brilliant Guy and design for it. Because if we don't, with his natural confidence and expertise, he will dominate every conversation. So here are the basic principles. To make a smart group, we first need to invite a diverse group of people to the table. Second, we need to make sure we actually listen to the variety of perspectives. And finally, we need to actively prevent the dynamic of the most confident dominating the conversation. So why do women and people of color need to be full partners in the global conversation? I think it's more than just that women are empathetic and Indigenous people are spiritual. And including us is part of the magic formula for common sense at scale. That's it.
Thank you, Lauren. You started out with intelligence and algorithm to make intelligence produce utility. And the second point you made, which is actually the wealth of diversity, is the best thing we have in this world. And yet, diversity has resulted in divisiveness. I have attended many webinars in the last 6 months of lockdown. And it is the first time today I heard two words that are fundamental to solve every problem we face. And those two words are common sense. That if we operate red, less roadblocks. So thank you very much, Lorraine. And we look forward to working with you in Earth Odyssey. Thank you. KK Shan, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. My name is Kehkesha Basu. I'm connecting with you from Toronto, Canada. I am a United Nations human rights champion. As Dr. Shah just mentioned, I have just been named as a Forbes 30 under 30, and also one of the, I'm the youngest recipient of Canada's top 25 women of influence. And of course, I am, most importantly, I am the founder president of Green Hope Foundation. And I'm going to share my screen. Are my slides visible?
Yes.
Great. Okay, so we all know that we are living in an unequal world where every facet of our lives, be it historical or the present, is a reflection of this inequality. And even though women and girls constitute half of the human race, our progress, our freedom, our emancipation are often decided by men. And even now, in the age of SpaceX and missions to Mars, we still accept this because, as my fellow panelists mentioned, while there has been progress, there is still a very long way to go if we are to achieve gender parity. And we are now in the age of the Anthropocene, which the dictionary states as the age of man. And even in this definition, we see the bias that excludes women. Yet the effects and impacts of the anthropogenic age are felt much more disproportionately by women and girls, and more so by those in the global south. So for us, girls and women, the struggle begins from the womb to the tomb, and the severity of the situation varies depending in which part of the world or society you live in, but the fact is the struggle remains. Now, I wonder if you have heard of the Mule Women of Melilla, a Spanish enclave across the border from Morocco. So every day, scores of women carry heavy loads on their backs across the border between the Spanish enclave and Morocco. Melilla is a very important entry point for goods into North Africa. And the law says that if the women can carry them, they can be imported into Morocco duty-free. And women across the world continue to bear immense burdens juggling motherhood, work, family, and at the same time facing indignity and inequality. And one of the main reasons for gender imbalance is due to data gaps. Because simply put, women do not count. Our issues are shrouded in perception and bias. And this lack of data, especially in developing economies, makes it almost impossible to accurately identify, analyze, and monitor the separate and unique needs and vulnerabilities of women and girls and develop effective, evidence-based solutions and policies. So only 13% of the world's countries dedicate a budget to gender statistics. And currently, 85% of countries do not even have laws that mandate gender-based surveys. And to top it all, almost 60%, that's about three-fifths of the world's nations, do not even produce or publish data about violence against women. So our problems and issues, therefore, continue to stay hidden, just brushed under the carpet and forgotten. And climate change has added another dimension to our woes. The fires in the Amazon have brought some much needed attention to the human-induced climate crisis. And while its impacts are felt every day in some part of the world, countries with the largest emissions continue to go for billions into new coal mines, oil platforms, and pipelines. And women and girls experience climate change, whether it's the sudden onset like hurricanes or its slow onset like desertification, in profoundly different ways to men. Women, especially single women, female-headed households, women with disabilities, and elderly women, as well as girls, tend to face greater risks after sudden onset events like cyclones. In their day-to-day lives, they already experience entrenched forms of discrimination and inequality that bar them from participating in society to their fullest potential. For example, basic education, healthcare, adequate food and nutrition, little to no access to decent work, leadership opportunities, as well as the direct physical and emotional effects of violence. So when poverty is added to that picture more than any other factor, it compounds situations of vulnerability in disaster because women make up 70% of the world's poor. So life for us women and girls is far from being fair and equal. And it's about time this changed, but things will not change on its own. Because even in this era of hyperloops, artificial intelligence, and blockchain, the dark social taboos of the Middle Ages still forces 129 million women across 29 countries in Africa and the Middle East to become victims of genital mutilation. Every day, a bride gets burned to death in India for a dowry. And there is no record of the millions of female fetuses that have been aborted over the years, killing us before we are even born. And every day, everywhere, girls and women face violence and abuse simply because we are girls or women. So I believe, and once again echoing my fellow panelists, the solution lies in our empowerment through education. And this is our mission at Green Hope Foundation, to empower children and youth with a special focus on girls and women using education for sustainable development as a transformative tool that provides them with the knowledge, skills, attitudes, values, and behaviors needed to think and act for a sustainable future, and most importantly, make them aware of their rights and know what they have the right to do, the right to education, the right to adequate healthcare. And only through education can we break the age-old social taboos and barriers that impede our progress. So gender parity is still a long way off, but the fact that it has been recognized as an issue is in itself a huge positive. So the Me Too movement has helped to galvanize global opinion, not just in developed countries, but also in poorer nations where women and girls face tremendous inequalities. So sustainability now has a fourth pillar. It is not only about economic progress, environmental conservation, or societal progress. It is inherently about gender equality. And as Kofi Annan famously said, gender equality is more than a goal in itself. It is a precondition for meeting the challenge of reducing poverty, promoting sustainable development, and building good governance. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, KK Shan. I think what is very special about the work you do is you are working totally on the ground with Green Hope. And of course, sustainability agendas, policies mean nothing unless we operate at the ground level. I am going a little bit out of step here, but with your permission, I would like to appeal to KK Shan, Loren, and Alexia that we would very much provide a lead also within our panel for Earth Odyssey to undertake this digital world that nobody wants anymore. But we would like to use the digital to connect women and have a much wider discussion on the idea of inspiring women, because all of you have emphasized that aspect. So, KK Shan, thank you so much. Shyoma, you have the floor.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I like that this conversation has been approached from different perspectives, and I'll be bringing my beat into the mix. My name is Chioma Onyenucheya Uko, and I'm a lawyer. Unlike most of you good people, I have not founded an NGO. But what I do is essentially to offer my service through existing organizations chief of which is the Federation, International Federation of Women Lawyers, otherwise known as FIDA. And then the Nigerian Bar Association, which is an association of men and women called to the practice of law in Nigeria. And currently I am the vice chairman of MBA in Abuja. That's the Federal Capital Territory. And in my interventions around issues as they affect women and children, especially in seeing that we attain a truly equal world where the both genders perform at optimum, I have been engaging mostly from the point of legal, advocacies around legal frameworks to see that women get protection and that women also are able to, you know, fully maximize their potentials. And that is very important, especially in Nigeria here, because while we battle with systematic mindsets, while we battle with culture, tradition, it is difficult for women to pull through and surmount these obstacles unless they find some kind of policy, some kind of framework, legal, legislative, that makes it, that makes them entitled to things that should ordinarily be their due. When we talk about fundamental human rights, which should be, universal, of course, and which are codified even in our constitution in Nigeria here, you still see that though there shouldn't be discrimination against persons, those discriminations happen. While there shouldn't be, while children should be entitled to education, especially to junior secondary level, you still see that retention of girls in schools are very low. While we make advocacies around children remaining children, being allowed to enjoy their innocence, their childhood until they come to age of majority of 18, unfortunately, in most communities in Nigeria, you still find that children are bestrotted at very early ages, and that marriages are happening of young children, children who cannot legally give consent, yet these marriages are contracted on their behalf, and their childhoods are taken away, snatched away from them, and they are sent out into an otherwise adult engagement of marriage. So those are the things I focus more on. And then one of the ways we do that, especially in the FCT where I am resident, is luckily with the aggregation of voices of women organizations coming together, we were able to lobby the legislature to pass what we call the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act. While initially it was intended to be an act that protects women and girls, but because of the dominance of our legislature by the men, and unfortunately, men who are not quite empathic to the issues of women or who don't quite understand those issues, the politics around it eventually made it necessary that we open up that conversation to incorporate all persons. Well, it wasn't what was intended at the outset, but at least it gives us a document. It gives us something that enables us even protect the vulnerable that we seek to protect. And one of the things that ACT has done for us is to also provide for what we call a protection order. I'm sure that for those of you who come from developed climes, it may sound like usual. You may find it ordinary, but it is not so ordinary from here, because one of the reasons why we have seen that women continue to endure situations that subjugate them, situations that undermine their dignity of human person, situations that pose barriers and impediments on their efforts to attain, is because in the domestic spaces they cannot really express themselves without suffering domestic abuse. And most of these domestic abuse have become some kind of like a norm, like it's normal, like it's acceptable, like they can't even speak up. When they do speak up, the religious leaders, their traditional leaders, their peers, the people who should otherwise rally to their rescue are the same people who try to make excuses for those things and try to, you know, settle them like they were some kind of civil issues, some kind of domestic matters that are not quite worthy of serious intervention. So, but with the advent of the passage of the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act, what it has done is that it criminalizes all these offenses against persons, most of whom are women and girls, and it now enables them to get respite from the state. They can, those things can now be treated as the crimes they are and not just as mere offenses. And then it also allows opportunity for the women to approach the courts and get protection, at least something that enables them, I hope that's not the bell I heard, something that enables them, you know, some succor, some shelter while they are able to explore their next options. That wasn't the case. And we continue also in advocacies in the manner of sensitization, in the manner of outreaches, because we need to take this knowledge, this information to the grassroots. Most of the people who are supposed to be the gatekeepers, most of the people who are role players in seeing that these things are implemented, some of them are not aware. Some of them do not have a full appreciation or understanding of the issues. So we do that using the media, whether traditional or new media. And then we also go to the grassroots, to the schools, to the palaces, to the communities, to the marketplaces. And then we'll try to sensitize them. We're trying to raise a new generation of people who are conscientized to understanding that violence against women and girls are crimes and that women's rights are human rights. So that's actually most of the area my interventions are around. I don't know if it was the bell I heard earlier, but
Thank you so much, Shoma Onyenchaya Uko. You spoke very much as a lawyer, and one should never interrupt a lawyer, because when I go to see a lawyer and I say, good morning, how are you? The lawyer says, stop, don't speak. And she turns on that button under the table and says, good morning, how are you? But let me say that Universal Declaration of Human Rights, every minute, everywhere in the world, they are being violated. And this declaration in words and deed was supposed to persecute, but we haven't persecuted any individuals who do this. We are today developing legal environment for crimes against nature. Ecocide is doing that. And I think when you think of gender, which is half the world's population, and their rights of half the world's population are being broken, and a movement to make sure that this human right we make progress on. We worry about human right of education, human right of hunger, human right of poverty. But this gender is a primary driver of all these other issues. And I think the legal community needs to make a real case that we need to recognize and persecute under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So I want to appreciate all the interventions we've had. It's been an excellent group. And I wonder, Yuri, that it's time we have a majority of women in our webinars. But now the floor is open for discussion. So please raise your hand and we will give you the floor. Loren, you're getting nearer the screen, so go ahead.
Oh, I didn't have a question, but I was sitting there wondering how we could maybe, because there are, you know, quite a few women on this call working in education and kids, and how we could maybe combine our efforts in powerful ways to make an international network that was more powerful and more fun, honestly.
Excellent. This is one of the underlying projects of Earth Legacy, that we need to educate everyone from children, including parents, all the way to the parents, in the school of life education, which is missing in our schools, our colleges, and our universities. So your point, a lot of you are working in that practical arena of the school of life education, which is how do you live with empathy with other people and all these aspects of living sustainably. So I think it's a very good point. And anyone else like to comment on how practically within our small framework we can plant the seeds of what Lorraine just described?
Well, it's a great idea because indeed that's also one of the focus of Output the Books. That's one of the next steps we would like to do. And we've recently initiated some contact with French-speaking African countries because we first have to start with a language, so it will be French. But the aim would be, like, for example, to exchange best practices. And one of the first examples that we have been asked to present is on mindfulness. And we are about to put one of our partners in contact with an association in Benin, and in order to give a mindfulness sequence and to initiate them within that practice. But we would like to expand, of course, with different subjects and different opportunities. So I'm really keen on working towards that with you, Lauren, with Kekakshan as well, with Amina in Nigeria, and Chioma maybe as well, in order to interact more and more and to really exchange those best practices. Sometimes we don't even need to speak, actually. Mindfulness, obviously, we don't have to talk to specifically do mindfulness initiatives inside of the instructions, but I'm pretty sure that most of our actors and partners do speak English, so I would be delighted to work on that project in order to exchange and empower teachers as well as the
excellent children. Alexia, please take that initiative with the names that you mentioned and bringing in intelligence and common sense into the same picture. Kekakshan, I have a question for mm-hmm. you. In your Green Hope Foundation, how much work are you doing to educate children to adults in the school of life education? Not what we learn in the school or the college or the university, but the real school of life education.
Yeah, that is a really good question. And that is exactly what Green Hope does, even when we are partnered with formal education institutions. And like I said, through education for sustainable development, environmental sustainability, social sustainability, economic sustainability. So in certain parts of the world, teaching them about the environment through turtle conservation and teaching them through turtle conservation research, where they can learn from the scientists themselves and see for themselves how turtles come up later and can go back. And or even, for example, education on menstrual hygiene, because in some of the countries that we work in, the whole idea of menstrual hygiene is seen as a taboo. So educating them on that, because that is not taught in their schools, and most of the time, the children whom we work with have been dropped out of school, especially during this pandemic. So, and this is for both the children and the adults, working together with them and ensuring that they have a very holistic approach towards their education that is not bound by what their textbooks teach them, but what they learn and can apply in their everyday lives. And it ranges from, like I said, a very broad range in all aspects of sustainability. And we ensure that this enables them to have the skill sets to go out into the world and be the best versions of themselves, and turning empathy into real action on the ground.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to give the floor to Yukepeme. You have 6.5 minutes, Yukepeme. Yes.
Professor Mahendra,
to Professor maybe, Aurora, that we can have a longer time after that, please.
Yeah.
Can you hear us, Professor Aurora? Hello? Can you see if you can solve the problem, Yuri? In the meantime, Yukepeme, you please take the floor.
Greetings. My name is Upeme Okon. I'm an ambassador for peace, a lawyer, a musician, and so on. Peace is a condition for a just world. I'll be speaking on meaningful inclusion of women as peace actors and educators. According to the United Nations Entity for Gender Equality and the Empowerment of Women, also known as UN Women, between 1992 and 2019, women constituted, on average, 13% of negotiators, 6% of mediators, and 6% of signatories in major peace processes worldwide. About 7 out of every 10 peace processes did not include women mediators or women signatories. These figures have to increase. Women must be educated on peace and conflict strategies. Even when women are educated, even when we find women who are not, who don't present themselves for these opportunities, they should be fished out. We find out where they are and include them in the processes so that we don't have this excuse of the women are not showing up. Look for them. We have to fish them out and involve them in this process. The United Nations Security Council Resolution 1325, which was adopted in the year 2000, reaffirms the important role of women in prevention and resolution of conflicts and in peace building. And it stresses the importance of their equal participation and full involvement in all efforts for the maintenance and promotion of peace and security. I align with education as a viable strategy for peace. My experiences indicate that people can change their beliefs and behaviors, embrace good values, and apply non-violent conflict resolution methods through peace education. And so it is necessary. Today we've heard about education. And I advocate education, peace through education. To commemorate the United Nations International Day of Peace in the year 2013, I presented a paper on building a culture of peace and national development, the role of women in family education. And I noted the importance of education, and I proved the correlation between education and peace. I read an excerpt from that presentation, the presentation I made. National policies which accentuate, implement, and sustain education at all levels and forms are the pedestal upon which peace and national development can be guaranteed. Women have been identified as capable educators and pillars of peace in the family and beyond. I am optimistic that the collaboration of men, other members of the household, and stakeholders will sustain this energy. I conclude with the words of the former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan. For generations, women have served as peace educators, both in their families and in their societies. They have been instrumental in building bridges rather than walls. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ukepeme. Professor Aurora, can you hear us? Professor Anchal? I don't think she's connected. Yuri? So, Chioma, I give you the floor.
Okay. The only other thing I want to add is, one of the other things I try to do is having women as, naturally, the women are given to nurture. And since women are naturally given to nurture, can we begin to take more responsibility for the society that we somehow have shaped? I realize that, yes, patriarchy has molded things, and patriarchy has stifled the, you know, the full expression of women. But as caregivers, as mothers, as you know, guardians, whatever role we are playing, as teachers, one of the speakers had mentioned, I think it was the first speaker, who pointed out that most of the people within the education sector are women. Yet, despite occupying these positions, we still have a society that has continued in a retrogressive manner. I mean, as it affects gender equality. Can we get to the place where we begin to deliberately, consciously inform mindsets of the young ones that are under our nurture? What kind of men are we raising? Who are they going to be? These are the people that should shift the paradigm around patriarchy. These are the people that should form the new generation of men and women who believe in coexisting equally and you know, complementing one another based on strengths, capacities, and the rest of them. So I think it's important that while we do what we can in policy formulation, influencing, and the rest of it, it's important we begin to directly target the next generation towards seeing that we engender a departure from what we're all complaining about right now. And we are able to do it. We are the ones who influence the most. The moderator had rightly pointed out how some people even worship their mothers. Most of us do. So if we have that much power, how are we using it? How are we utilizing it to, you know, form the right mindsets? Because I also see that some of this, some of the patterns that we complain about are also encouraged by women. They are the ones who make excuses for some of these things. It shouldn't be. So let us please be deliberate. Let's commit, each of us, and then, you know, see how we're able to expand the space and ensure that other women come along and we're able to engender a next generation that lives up to, you know, the kind of humanity that we want to see.
Thank you. Thank you, Shoma. I will come back to your words that let each one of us commit. But before that, I give the floor to Amina.
Thank you. I've been wanting to comment on the same line of the power we have as women to teach our children, to teach our loved ones. But what are we teaching them? We have to be educated, very educated, and in a very broad way that is going to help nurture those qualities that will help build that sustainable world, build peace, build harmony. So we need to be very, practical, but very strategic in getting this information, in mining information, perhaps information about various faiths, things, something we never even talked about that. There is faith behind every one of us here. The Chinese have their beliefs. The Indians have their beliefs. Do we even understand? We in Africa, we have our beliefs. And these are things that forms our governments, you know, forms our behaviors and things like that. Do we understand these things? So we need, as women, we need to educate ourselves properly on these things that can help build peace. We need to understand these various religions, not even run away from it. We need to know how we are similar, how we believe the same things, perhaps in love, in creation care, in living in harmony with one another, and then even educate those who even believe in this various faiths, and particularly children, loved ones, so we can pass down good virtues, good qualities, behaviors that can build a sustainable world. That's what I believe is really, really important.
Professor Aurora, can you hear us?
Yeah. Hi, Mr. Shah, hi, Upimi, and hi, everybody. How are you all? Sorry, there was a lot of technical glitches here because it was raining outside heavily and network problem was there. But fortunately, everything has been okay now. A lot of discussion is going on, and I'm listening. And whatever I have listened up till this time, it was excellent. And I've been part of a youth lab, Colorado, USA, become international director of that organization. And I also work as a social activist, as an environmentalist, and I'm a professor in commerce. And I'm stressing upon the entrepreneurship and innovation because it is the major requirement of the today's scenario. I'm talking from the point of view of my country, India, the job scenario is worst here. And I believe like this is happening because of COVID in every, nook and corner of the world. And because of this, like we are creating entrepreneurs, especially women, because I feel like that women, they are supposed to be independent and they are powerful, having the strong senses as well, and women are no less than anybody. In today's scenario, the experiential learning is required. And we all know that in the colleges and the universities, as Mr. Shah was saying, like the pattern of the education system is very, very theoretical. It's like all the ratification is there, Mr. Shah, and the people are not getting, and the parents are not knowing the world scenario as well. This is the problem, that they don't know what their kids are meant for, and they are forcing them to do something which they are not meant for. And we are, wanting students to know to excavate their internal strengths and the passions, and they should work on that and build up their empires, because it is very important to give hands-on learning to them, and their, life learning skills should be provided to them so that they can start learning, earning, and growing early on in their lives. So I'm consistently working on making students, like as if you have might have heard about the Gitanjali Rao from USA, who is becoming this, like a little girl has been interviewed by Angelina Jolie, that she has invented and worked so much on the environment friendly products. And the 7-year-old girl is creating organic candies for the diabetic patients and for the people or for the kids over there, so that they should not have a greater sugar content in their diet. So we are promoting healthy lifestyle and entrepreneurship, innovation, incubation, and acceleration, which will provide the students, the hope and the their world of the dreams they want to pursue. And apart from that, like we deny and prohibit that only simply theoretical education out of the book.
Thank you. Yuri, I am going to give you the floor for a few words. You will be followed by myself. And then the final speaker will be a very special person from a very special group that's been in our webinar today. So Yuri, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. I just want to share my screen and give it just a few words, just an example. I'm a part of a club, a New York Explorers Club. And our club, we do, of course, research, and we value science and good examples. And just give you this example of this woman. She's now 68 years old. She's the director of the club. And she was the only human being that has been to space three times. She's been walking on space outside the spaceship, the space shuttle, on her three missions. It just became last year during the pandemic, this year actually, during the pandemics, the first woman to get to the bottom of the ocean, Challenger Deep. So the only human being in the planet that has been out in the space, walking the space, into space, and to the deepest point of our oceans is Kat Sullivan. She's 68 years old, and I think she's a good example of a woman that we have to follow. So thank you very much for everybody. It's been a great, this webinar. I'm here and learning a lot. And I think if we get together, like you said, man and woman, and we plan together a better future, we can do that. It just needs goodwill.
Thank you, Yuri.
Thank you.
You gave a wonderful example that from the top to the bottom, it's a woman who accomplished the two tasks. I want to thank each and one of you who have spoken in this panel. And we realize that we want you to join us in Earth Odyssey and its mission. We will share with you our project document. And our goal is to have panel discussions in some 30 countries around the world on specific topics of sustainability, but the focus will be on action. The panel will comprise of 50% youth, 50% adults, comprised of government, scientists, technologists, civil society, and business. 24 people in the panel, approximately, with about 20 observers. So we would like each and every one of you have amazing things to contribute. Normally, the moderator has the final word, but I cannot. I have not the final word. And I want one of you, eight, to select, or one of you to jump forward and have the final word of this seminar. The floor is open to all of you, please. I'm watching the expressions, so if you don't volunteer, you'll be picked out.
I can do
it. Okay, Lauren.
Oh, this is Keksha. Can you hear me? Okay. Cool. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, with the current...
Yes.
I am audible, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I wanted to say that, you know, with the current pandemic, like all of the other natural and human-induced disasters, it's been a saga of unequal impacts, with women and girls suffering being disproportionately severe. And as I mentioned earlier as well, out of the millions who've dropped out of school, it's the girls who are the least likely to go back. And a recent McKinsey report actually states that women's jobs are 1.8 times more vulnerable to this crisis than men's jobs. And I think that it is absolutely critical that we work on addressing these issues with great urgency, because we cannot achieve a sustainable world until and unless we involve every single gender, unless we involve the half of humanity that is currently left behind. And this process of reform cannot just be based on assumptions. We need greater commitments from nations, especially in the developing world, and LBCs to be committed in accumulating and publishing gender-related data in terms of health, in terms of education, employment, law, and order. And only based on this, actions and solutions can be devised, targeting the areas that need greater attention. So let us all work towards gender parity. And it gives me hope to see dialogues like this that actually work to ensure that we can achieve a sustainable world.
Lauren, you're back on. Lauren?
Yeah, I do see lots of connections between these efforts. Just from, you know, my vantage point, it seems like we have, you know, people working on the ground and developing really good ground strategies. And, you know, like what we're doing at Kiko Lab is how to be able to scale these efforts. So I think it'd just be super exciting to kind of combine these things in a way that we could piece those together and make it stronger to have efforts on the ground that could are also more flexible in terms of scaling. So it just seems really
Thank
exciting.
Thank you, Shoma.
I think I've said my friend, hello, you can hear me, right?
Yes, we can.
So I think I've said my bit. While I continue to do what I can, and those of us who are in the legal profession, it's important that we continue to ensure that these conversations escalate and also permeate the little spaces, the communities, the families, the schools, so that we are able to do a wholesome work of engendering a real reorientation that will give us the results we desire. Yes.
Anshal.
Yeah, I think somebody has very rightly said that if you have not followed your own dream, somebody else will hire you to fulfill theirs. So I think we all are unique, and everybody's is having this responsibility to create this world a better place to live in, to grow, prosper, and it's not a one-man show. And together we can create that community where we can provide our next generations a better place to live in. And by creating the women leaders, we can create a better place, and we can create that wonder, you know, in this on this universe, on this cosmos, and health, nutrition, and environment, education are the key areas where we are supposed to work together and to, you know, go for a longer period of time, catering all that positivity in us and spreading everywhere together.
Thank you. Thank you, Anshal. Amina.
Yes.
Well, okay. Just to wrap up, I think we have to be very conscious of the fact that we are in a climate emergency. Not everybody totally gets this, and let our strategies really come together to ensure that we meet the deadline, you know, to be able to ensure that our planet doesn't keep warming up beyond where it needs to warm up to, so that we can have all of these beautiful things we're all hoping to happen, gender equity and all women inclusion, it can all come to life someday. We can have hope for that. And we love our children too as women. So we should really think about this. Women should really fight for this because we love our children, and we hope that they would also have hope for the future.
Thank you.
So this is an idea. So we need to really push for that.
Thank you. I promise you, I will not have the last word of our webinar, because more important than words is your right hand. So can we have a show of right hands to say that we are all going to work on this common cause? Thank you, everybody.
Join us at earthodyssey.org. And sign our YouTube channel at youtube.com-earthodyssey.